Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call, and we now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, now joined by our next guest from Sportsnet, former NHL scout as well. He is Jason Bukala. Jason, thank you, man. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys? Exciting day out there on the left coast, I would think.
We were very foolishly concerned about what we would talk about this week, and then Alvin gets extended yesterday, then they make the Lindholm trade, so we're having a great time. Lots to talk about. Lots to chew on. And, you know, you had a great analysis of the trade up at sportsnet.ca that people should go check out. We'll start from the Canucks side of things. With Lindholm, how do you see his fit on this team?
Well, I think it's exactly what Vancouver needs. You know, that second layer in the middle of the ice, secondary scorer. I mean, he obviously slots right into being basically, you know, after the big line there that's been put together, the Lotto line after that, he'll quickly become, you know, the next layer of scoring, which is great. The good news here, guys, is that, you know, you get a player that plays quick and fast. He's about 56% in the faceoff dot. The coach is going to appreciate the way he plays the game. If he's not scoring, he's going to track properly up and down the ice. He can check. He's not overly physical. He's kind of an area guy, but he's got tons of pounce. So he's, you know, out of the gate, he'll jump to space to take away pucks and win battles that way. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he catches some lightning in a bottle here and gets back to closer to what he's capable of scoring wise. You know, he's fallen off a bit this year, but, you know, last year he was solid, and I wouldn't be surprised if he returns to that sort of, status. You know, it's always exciting to get to a new team, and you're going to be energized with the fact that, you know, let's be honest, this is a contending outfit now, and he's going to be energized by that. So this is a great ad by the Canucks, and I really like the fact that we got a couple of million left in the bank account as well.
Books, we got to get your take on the prospects. We've obviously had to delay our trade ideas show, by the way, just because every trade idea we got involved the Canucks 2024 first, and also Andre Kuzmenko. So we're gonna do it again next week. Jim Rutherford blowing up our plans. You obviously have a great feel for the value of futures going the other way. What are your thoughts on the price the Canucks paid here?
I thought it was more than fair, guys. Honestly, like the fact that we didn't have to touch Willander or Pettersson in this equation here, that's a win in my books. I really was kind of thinking that that was going to have to occur. So, you know, the Germo, Yanni Germo, who's playing in Cuckoo there in Liga, I really thought he was coming along a year ago almost to the date. You know, he's a big body, obviously, who's leaning defensive D. He's long. His puck play and his agility and mobility hasn't gone to another level from where it ended last season. So that was a concern. So he's still a project in my books. Nice ad for Calgary, but he's still a project. Big body. I'm calling him a recall at this point. And then, you know, Bobby Ristovich out of Kitchener. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could end up scoring 100 points in the Ontario Hockey League. But, you know, I do need to, and I think it's a fantastic story. I really enjoyed watching him play this year. I think it's a good ad for Calgary. I think that it's a fair price for Vancouver. The thing with this one there, guys, though, is that I'm not forecasting his offense to be power play one at the NHL level. Like, I still think he's a two, and he's a third pairing at even strength. So he does have an element. He sees the ice very well, makes plays through seams. He's like a quarterback. He can look off, you know, his first option and make it to the second or third, which is good. That's a real good skill set. But all in all, the cupboards are still full with what we have there left in Vancouver. I'm excited. I think that this was fair. And the first round pick this year, You know, I love kids at the draft. I've been doing it forever. I know it's an exciting time for them. It's an exciting time for the scouting fraternity. But I have to tell you that the late first round pick in this draft cycle, it's not the same as the last couple of draft cycles. So that's fair expense as well.
On Brustevich specifically, you know, as you mentioned, he's having the incredible season, but there are also some reasons to temper expectations a little bit. But I also look at it, you know, they drafted this guy in the third round last year's draft, right? So well less than a year ago. And now he's popped this season. He's had this campaign where he's significantly increased his value. You know, internally from the Canucks perspective, is it difficult to part with a prospect like that, right, that you found in the third round and now all of a sudden he's having this great season? Or do you look at it as, hey, we did our job, right? We found a guy in a third round and then he immediately increased his value from that point on. So that's what we're supposed to do. And if we use him to get a good player, that's just part of the game.
That's well said. I couldn't put it any better. Like, that's exactly what it is. Don't fall too in love with your prospects. It's called building out an organization. So, you know, selfishly, we all, you know, like Phil Golding, who's the Ontario-based scout here for the Canucks, you know, him and Todd Harvey, the director of scouting, I'm sure, you know, in the back of their mind, they're, you know, when they draft a kid and they see how well he's doing, you know, it's a feather in their cap and they feel real mm-hmm. good and they'd like to see him pull on a Canucks jersey someday. But I'll tell you what they want to see more than anything else is asset management equal an uptick in the roster. And at the end of the day, guys, all the positive conversations that the three of us have been having for months now about this team, this is just an extension of exactly that. And everybody wants to win more than they care about giving up assets when you have a chance to potentially go on a run in playoffs. So this conversation that we're having today compared to the ones we've had the last couple of years, I mean, I'll take this conversation any day. It makes me feel good, right? Gives me the warmer fuzzies compared to the other ones. So, you know, this is a good news day.
And just quickly, you know, from Calgary's perspective, they get Andre Kuzmenko as well. And we all know the story here with Andre Kuzmenko and how it didn't work with Rick Tocchet. Do you think he'll be able to kind of get it going for Calgary? And what do you think of that fit from the Flames perspective?
Yeah, I think that in short order, he absolutely will. I mean, you know, again, going back to a couple of years ago when we were talking about the addition of Kuzmenko to the roster, you know, this is a streaky player who's got some warts. We all know that, you know, defensively, he's no juggernaut. But let's not forget what he did really well last year. And let's not forget about what he is as a human being, too. Like, this is a good teammate. He's fun to be around at the rink. He rips pucks from the backside, the weak side flank on the power play. He's a goal scorer. And goal scorers are streaky. I think this is a good fit for Calgary for where they're at. It gives them, like, for me personally, if he hits and he starts to go off again, call it 25 to 30 goals next year. Let's say a year from now, the Flames don't find themselves in a positive space playoff position wise, which is, you know, that's very possible, but he's got 24 tucks. Let's just say that. Well, now there's going to be an uptick in interest and yes, he's got a no move and all that other kind of stuff, but he's in the last year of his deal. So they might be able to punt that asset down the road again, if their team isn't in a perfect position, or if they are, they might have found something with value. And, you know, let's not forget here, the fact that the Canucks didn't have to absorb any money, because personally I feel better on Kuzmenko organizationally at 4-5 or 4-2-5 than I do at 5-5. And that extra million or 1-2-5, like I'm all of a sudden going out and buying a Nick Seeler or something with it. You understand what I mean? So, you know, it's... I bet you he's going to do just fine there, and we'll just see how it goes long-term with the way the Flames playing out as a team.
One thing I'm hearing as the trade market shapes up, and now we've seen our first real domino fall here, Books, is, you know, and you've alluded to this in some of what you've talked about, but teams are really pushing in these talks to try and get future first-round picks. Does that surprise you? Does that match what you're hearing?
Yeah, it matches exactly what I'm hearing. And I still believe that between now and March, we're going to see some trades that, like, current prospect capital as well. I really believe that there's going to be teams out there looking for the return of and it won't even matter the clock so much. So like with Willander at college, or if you're talking about a guy who's developing in Europe, for example, like Pettersson is, you know, and you know how the clocks are different depending on what league you're playing in for arrival at the pro level. I don't think the clock matters as much as the value of the prospect. And for me personally, guys, again, and I keep coming back to this strategically, and I just want to be honest, and I don't want people to think it the wrong way. If I'm running a war room right now, knowing what I know about the landscape, I'm going after prospects, or I'm punting it down the road for a 2025 first, or maybe I might be able to massage it again to get a second this year and get a first next year. I'm spitballing. I'm just saying that the timing doesn't feel great for me to necessarily throw all my cards in for a first this year. I'm looking at attacking it a different way.
Jason, appreciate the time and the insight. Again, people should go check out your piece breaking down this trade at sportsnet.ca, and we look forward to chatting again next week.
Sounds great, fellas. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout weighing in on the Lindholm trade here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And, of course, lots for us to still chew on and get into with this trade as well, and we can get into the inbox 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of questions coming in here from Mike and Victoria is one, but lots of questions on this. What does an extension for Lindholm look like? And of course, he is a pending UFA. Now, Jim Rutherford said on the Jeff Merrick show earlier today that, you know, preference would be to keep him long term, but he also said that's far from a given. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, ideally he said he could be a rental, could be a long-term guy. In an ideal world, we'd like to keep him. But as I said, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. I mean, so this is a player, 29 years old. Okay. He'll turn 30 midway through next season. His trend lines concern me.
Yep.
Pretty significantly. And I think we need to appreciate a couple things here. One thing about the Canucks and how they've built this team, right? And this is to their credit. But in a lot of ways, in putting this together, whether it's the Lafferty trade or the DeSmith trade or the Cole signing or even the Pugh Suter or Susie signings, but somewhat less, like the Canucks have really kept their flexibility, their options open. In a world where this season had gone very, very differently, this team would have set the table so that they could change direction relatively quickly, right? In contrast to where this club has regularly been, right? The OEL buyout's the biggest piece of this, but there's a lot of just like small tinkering moves, trading Horvat, not signing that extension, et cetera, et cetera. In the wake of this deal, the Canucks are looking at 36-ish, $37 million. In projected cap space. Now, they've got a lot of good players expiring, right? That's a double-edged sword. They've done so well in finding value, and they've performed so well as a team that, like, almost to a man, these expiring guys are having career years and are going to get significant raises. But, you can't ignore the upside that comes attached to flexibility.
Yep.
Especially when that flexibility is attached to a club that seems like they're counting cards in terms of their pro scouting work. I mean, you know, whether it's Bluger or Pugh Suter, on and on. I mean, hit after hit after hit, just collecting singles, rallying, you know, in the eighth inning. That flexibility is a meaningful asset that I think they have to be protective about, and that I think they will be protective about. The price paid for Lindholm is significant for a rental. But you don't want to chase the logic of the price you pay.
No, there's always this perception of like, well, I like it as a rental. It's even better if they can extend him. And I don't think that's clearly true in this case.
Depending on what that, like, is there a world where Lindholm signs for $6 million on a 3-year deal? And we're like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But Lindholm's also probably going, I mean, I already told you, Johnny, do you want Lindholm or do you want Johnny Brodzinski? Because those are your two options among right-handed centermen poised to hit the market. Do you want Lindholm or, like, Chandler Stephenson, I think we'd imagine would stay in Vegas on a raise. Lindholm, You know, like, there's just not a lot of really good center. Adam Henrique, who's not really a center. Like, it gets pretty grim when you look at unrestricted free agent center options in a summer where the money's going to raise.
Yeah, like, Sean Monahan.
And then you have to get to, and I know this is what the Canucks are going to be weighing, you get to the point, like, would you rather have Lindholm 7x7, let's say, or retain, you know, let's say Zadorov, no, let's say Myers at 4x2 plus Joshua at 2x3 plus Lafferty at 2x whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, would you rather have those three glue guys who are, you know, younger and carry less risk individually and are easier to move as a result, or Lindholm on this huge ticket for his age 30 seasons? I mean, that's the balance that you have to weigh, and the flexibility that this club's going to have is that they're going to have the option, like, they're going to have the ability to actually juggle it and figure out what's best for the team.
And the Lindholm contract discussion is interesting because somebody else asked, you know, is the Bo Horvat contract a comp for Elias Lindholm? Now, when Bo Horvat signed that deal, I think the Lindholm camp certainly thought it was. And at that point, he was only, what, 6 months removed from having a career year, 40 goal score, second in the Selke when he was playing with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk for the Flames. Now, you look where he's gone since then.
I mean, Horvat just had such a wild platform year.
Yeah. I don't know that that is now a comp for Elias Lindholm, given how his career has gone since then and his production has gone since then. But I will say this. You talk about a high-leverage situation for a player, right? And now he leaves Calgary, who long shot to make the playoffs this year, or at least very least up against it to make the playoffs, gets to come to Vancouver. He's probably going to ride shotgun with Elias Pettersson. So he's back to playing with an elite player like he was during his best years in Calgary. And he's going to have a chance to do it in the playoffs. He's going to have a chance to resuscitate his platform year here going into unrestricted free agency. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to crush it necessarily, right? The Canucks hope he does. But he has a chance to really change how the market perceives him, or at least to kind of get back to where he was in terms of perception, I think, a little bit, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so the most relevant Horvat comparable was Tomáš Hertl.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindholm, even with the platform year struggles this season, profiles similarly. Like, we're talking about, you know, reliable two-way guys, top-of-the-lineup caliber, 0.65 to 0.7 points per game. That's kind of the market. Like, that's an $8 million player. So, and with the cap going up, is that an 8.5? Is that a $9 million player? I mean, we'll see if people are actually willing. We'll see if the market will actually bear that for Lindholm. I think that is an open question. You know, maybe he loves it here, right? Like,
yeah,
there's
maybe
all
he's
sorts,
like, I love playing with Elias Pettersson.
I love walking to the rink from, you know.
From Yaletown.
From Yaletown, yeah. I love the seawall walk to the rink, and I want to keep doing it. Who knows, right? I love Rick Tocchet.
Who doesn't? Other than Andre Kuzmenko.
I also love puzzles.
I love puzzles.
I don't know why the puzzle thing is
so
amusing
great.
To me.
Tockett's going to be on Halford and Brough tomorrow, and they got to ask him, like, what kind of guy would you say Elias Lindholm is? Like, wall guy, inside guy? What do you think? What kind of guy is Lindholm?
Well, has anyone ever asked Rick if he really likes Jenga? Because that's a wall puzzle. I feel like that combines his two favorite things.
More like a tower puzzle. I wouldn't really call it a wall.
Does a tower have walls?
Yeah, but whatever.
I rest my case.
All right. You're not building a wall when you're playing Jenga.
You're not. Anyway, Lindholm. We just don't know what it looks like, but I think the two major takeaways here are, do not confuse a really good player in Elias Lindholm for, like, a genuine superstar level, like an elite level player, like Elias Pettersson, right?
Yep.
The two Eliases might share a first name, but they are not comparable pieces by any means. And I don't view this as Pettersson insurance. I do, however, view it as a trade that enhances in material ways Vancouver's flexibility going into this offseason, which is positive, especially given the discipline that this management group has shown in managing flexibility to this point. And, you know, I have zero issue, and in fact might prefer the deal if it is a pure rental.
I think that's the key point here. This is not like, ooh, that's a steep price unless they can sign him. It's like, no, you got him for this run. You have the option potentially of signing him to an extension. And I agree, he's not, it's not as if like, well, if Pettersson walks, we'll just sign Lindholm and then we're good to go. It's not that at all.
Good to go where?
Yeah. But if the worst case comes to fruition with Elias Pettersson and he does leave, again, you've got a guy on hand who you've gotten to take a look at, and it's an option, at least. It becomes, to me, a more plausible option to sign him. So I think that's the key here, right? Like, they've got all these different things they can do this summer, depending on how these next 4 or 5 months go.
Yeah, I've seen the, don't worry, we lost an elite player, but we're fine, we have Elias Lindholm movie before, and I didn't enjoy it.
You didn't like what happened in Calgary over the last couple of years?
Not a huge fan.
No,
but
not
he's,
great.
That doesn't mean he's not a great fit. I'm out on the insurance angle.
Yeah, no, it's flexibility.
I'm out on the insurance angle. I'm in on the player and the short-term needs he fills.
We will take a break. Jeremy Colliton, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks, will join us next. Always looking forward to chatting with Jeremy, get his take on what his team is doing and some of the interesting prospects down there on Abbotsford as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strands here with you. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? It is time for the Abbotsford Farm Report, brought to you by Homes, by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere, visit Homes by DavidLYoung.com. And for the Abbotsford Report, we now go live to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline. We are joined by the head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks, Jeremy Colliton. Jeremy, thank you for taking some time to chat with us today. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And, you know, we'll get into some of the specific players on your team and some of the things going on with the team on a day-to-day basis soon here. But, you know, Patrick Alvin gave the press conference yesterday after he signs an extension to remain the general manager of the Canucks into the future. And, you know, speaking about his goals and how he sees this club, he kept coming back to, you know, Abbotsford as a big part of the puzzle that they're building here. And when you hear that kind of recognition from the general manager, you know, on that occasion of him signing an extension with the team, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons I came initially. Was I'm pretty sure it's exactly the conversation I had with Patrick, was I want to be part of building something. And that's what gets you excited. And obviously, you know, everyone loves winning, and you can contribute to that. That's pretty worthwhile. And I think we're competitive people. There's a lot of competitive people in this organization, and hopefully that's going to, you know, lead to results. So obviously we know our role. We want to do our part. I think everyone takes a lot of pride in Vancouver having the success we're having, and hopefully with that it can lead to, you know, more.
Jeremy, you talk about building something, and it's kind of an interesting dynamic for the American League coach, in that as the team gets better, right, as the individual players on the NHL team perform better, right, their market value enhances, right? It becomes harder at the NHL level to have the same amount of depth. And in some ways, that makes your contribution, right, preparing guys to potentially step into roles next season, like, that much higher leverage. Is that something you're conscious of?
Yeah, I think probably no matter the situation, you know, if we can be getting guys ready to step in and make a difference, it's going to help. You know, I think even from last year, our team to the team they have in Vancouver, there's a bunch of guys who spent a lot of time with us who are contributing. I think that depth, like, you need, in my opinion, if you don't have depth, I don't know how you win consistently at the NHL level. So you got to have guys who can come in and play, whether it could be 80 games, but even 30 games makes a big difference. And, so when we get guys, like, sometimes we get 20-year-olds, sometimes we get 26-year-olds.
Right.
And if we can get them ready to play, that helps build out the depth. and competition. And I think that's an important component of any team's success. It can't be a guarantee that certain guys are going to play in certain situations no matter what because you have no one else. I just think that that's one of our, as coaches, that's one of our main tools we have is ice time and opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have competition, it's really tough to enforce a high standard of play. Mm. So, you know, as from being a head coach in the NHL, I think I have that experience to recognize how important it is. And that's part a big part of my job is to support talk and the organization by getting guys ready.
In preparing sort of some of this organization's higher profile young players, we've seen now in consecutive years, so both of your years in Abbotsford, Hoglander last year and Pod Colson this year, the sort of assignment with like maybe a degree of patience beyond that which we'd expect for like a normal sort of recall option, right? Give a guy a long runway in Abbotsford to build up their confidence. Does your approach with those sorts of players, you know, within the context of that accountability, materially change at all?
Well, I do think that having a longer runway and more time to build their habits and the base of their game is, I think it's a huge benefit, especially for guys in their first contract. It's a hard, like, NHL is a hard league. Like, I don't know, like, you're going to face adversity and the pressure and the scrutiny and there's not a lot of room for error. And so if you don't have a base of your game that you can fall back on when, you know, you're facing adversity or it's a back-to-back or, you know, confidence maybe isn't there, I think it's really hard to be consistent at the next level. So we're trying to give that to our guys, that base, so that when they're having an off night, their minimum level is still high enough that they can be counted on when the game's on the line.
You know,
and it's not like we want guys to produce. You know, like obviously, like it's part of, if you don't make plays at our level, it's going to be hard to make plays and drive play at the next level. But it's more about how they play and can we get guys ready to be on the ice when the game's on the line? Because the coach needs options that you can put out there. So, you know, that's, we're trying to get them there.
Apologies for jumping in a couple times there, Jeremy. I don't know why I'm trigger happy all of a sudden here, but you know, one of the other things we hear from the organization from all levels is about, you know, building that internal competition. And I think from the outside, we often look at that as maybe, you know, at training camp, somebody who's maybe unexpected coming up and pushing for a spot, but that's a year round thing, right? And from your perspective as the coach of Abbotsford, how do you translate that idea of building that internal competition to kind of a day by day level?
Yeah, I think that is often the push pull of the American League, and I don't believe every organization does it the same way. Like, I personally believe that you need to enforce a standard for how you play, how you practice, how you compete, how do you play for the team? Because if you don't, you get to the NHL, and then, you know, certain things are expected. If that's not part of your DNA, part of your identity, you just can't flick a switch. So I don't think, like, obviously we invest a lot of time in our young players and give them every opportunity to succeed, but it doesn't mean they necessarily get on the ice unless they've earned it, you know? And I think that's the best way we can prepare these guys to play at the next level and be counted on, be someone that Vancouver can win with. And so, but I believe what happens is sometimes you find players you didn't expect to find, you know, a guy who wasn't drafted, a guy who maybe spent time in the East Coast League, or maybe they're on their second or third organization. If it's based, if what they get is based on merit and based on what they give to the team, I think the cream rises to the top. and you get useful players that maybe you didn't expect to get. And young guys who maybe don't have it figured out early, they're forced to change. They're forced to adapt their game, adapt their mentality to how they need, you know, how they need to act. And it might take a little bit of extra time, but I think the end product is better in the end.
Jeremy, AHL All-Star Game is coming about. One of those undrafted guys, Arshdeep Bains, will represent the Abbotsford Canucks there. I know he's been a star pupil within the organization for a long time. I know his offensive game, especially on the power play, has taken a big step forward. What are you seeing from him in his second professional year?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, perfect timing to bring him up because that's a great example, right? He wasn't drafted, doesn't have, like, he had good numbers in the Western League, but not like a huge pedigree where, you know, this is a can't-miss player. But he's been totally committed to getting his, you know, to improving his game. And it doesn't mean there's ups and downs. Like, he was in and out of the lineup last year, at the beginning of the year, even this year. There's been times where, you know, the production is there, but the two-way play, the managing the game has been, you know, inconsistent at times, but he's getting better all the time, you know. And the way we are really young this year, and we've had a ton of injuries at our level. Vancouver hasn't really needed as many guys. They've been relatively healthy, but we've just been ravaged all year. And so we got guys playing, you know, huge minutes. We're asking a lot of them. And he's been one of those guys who, if he's not good on any given night, we're not winning. And that's a lot to take on as a second-year pro. But he's getting better all the time and learning how to be a producing player while also not losing those two-way habits that are getting a chance to play in the NHL. So he's doing well, and great to see him be recognized as well with the All-Star nod.
You know, as you mentioned, Bains, undrafted, comes from the WHL and, you know, making these really impressive strides early in his pro career. What impact does it have on the rest of the team when they see a player like that, undrafted, who's really fighting for his chance in pro hockey, and they see how he's developing and how seriously he's taking it? What does that do for the rest of the team?
Yeah, huge impact, because I think it just shows that the story's not written. Like, you know, if you're willing to put the work in and play for the team, and obviously you gotta work on your skill level and your skating and all those things. But if you're willing to do it, there's a path for you to play it in the NHL. I've told these guys, you know, all last year, this year, the best thing I can do for you is help you be someone who can play on a winning team to the next level. Because if you're that guy, you're gonna have a chance to have a long career, make a lot of money, you know, have a great life. And so I think, you know, the more guys we can, like, help on that path, no matter where they start, it's great for everyone. Great for their careers, great for the organization. You know, hopefully we can produce more players than can even fit on Vancouver. Now we have extra assets that we can use.
Mm. Yes, well, just in terms of team performance, right? You guys are, you know, in a pretty tight, like, it's a pretty tight at the sort of Western Conference level that you're at, which is, you know, fifth in the West going into just slightly past the halfway point. What have you liked about the way your club has trended and weathered some of those injuries to this point?
Yeah, it's a dogfight. And yeah. I think I might have said this to you guys before, but I think we are very fortunate to play in the division we're in. It's our own little league. There's 10 teams, but it's very competitive. There's a lot of teams, you know, with excellent rosters, and you're being tested every night, and it's a great development environment for our guys. And this year, like, we are younger, and then in addition to that, we've been missing a lot of players throughout the year. We're missing a bunch of guys now, so that's been. It's been a challenge. Sometimes, you know, you're trying to hold it together, but at the same time, the opportunity some guys have been given and they've been really challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys have stepped forward and some guys have shown they're not quite ready. But that's great. you know, it just shows you where you got to go. And I think now we're to the point, like, we're still beat up, but second half of the year, there's no rookies after Christmas. You got to step forward and show you can help us win. And that's, I think, we're asking for more consistency from our team. The high level, we've seen it. The minimum level's got to go up. And if it does, then I think we're going to be really competitive down to the end and be in a position to play playoff games. That's a great opportunity for our group.
One of the players that I know fans are very interested in on your team, of course, is Vasily Podkolzin. And, you know, as we talk about the organization maybe needing young players to come in and fulfill roles at the NHL level, whether it's later this year or even going into next season, I think, you know, he's a name that that's going to come up. Do you think he's almost there to that level where, you know, he can be called up to the NHL, counted on to play a role and be there permanently rather than going back and forth between the AHL and the NHL?
Yeah. I mean, he's played in the league. Like, it's not as if he's never played games. He's got a lot of games under his belt. I think, you know, what he's still building is that consistency, that base. I think you saw it last year. Like, he came up and he looked really good early on, and then it's hard. It's hard to keep your level. And so, you know, we're trying to help him find that base where even when he's not feeling it, it's not his best night, you know, the coach can still put him on the ice, you know, at the end of a period or last 10 minutes of the game when the game's on the line. And I think even, you know, like here at our level, at his best, you know, he's best player on the ice, you know, and physical and, you know, hard to play against and driving the puck in the net and just a menace, you know, with and without the puck. And it's just finding a way to bring that, you know, 95% of the time as opposed to 70% of the time. But I would say, like, the last couple of weeks, it's been more consistent. And, you know, it's as we play, you know, bigger and bigger games going down the stretch, I think that brings the best out of those types of guys. Like, I think when I think back to Hoglander last year, you know, he was up and down for the first couple months with us. But as the games, you know, it got to be more of a playoff style and playoff atmosphere, and then into the playoffs, he really found another level. And once you learn how to play in those games and be that guy, again, I said it before, it becomes part of your identity, it becomes part of who you are. It's not something you think of doing when you're reminded. It's just something that's just what you become, and that's what we got to get to with Pots.
Jeremy, appreciate the time today and filling us in on the latest with the Abbotsford Canucks. I know you got a pair of home games this coming up this weekend, so best of luck in those, and hopefully we can chat again soon.
Thanks so much. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for joining us, Jeremy.
That is Jeremy Colleton, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks. And yeah, they play Friday and Saturday in Abbotsford against the San Jose Barracuda. You can get tickets for those right now at the Abbotsford Canucks website. And some interesting commentary there just in general about the philosophy he uses to go about building his team, about some of the specific players as well. And I did think it was interesting that, you know, hear him kind of explicitly say, yeah, we develop guys and they become assets. And that's great. Like, that's something that the organization can use to go out and acquire more players for the big team. And one of the notable facets of the Elias Lindholm acquisition is they didn't trade anybody from Abbotsford, right? Hunter Brustevich obviously still playing in the OHL. So Jeremy Colleton still has all of those young players to develop and mold into either players or assets for the Canucks.
Yeah, I think the club's pretty happy about that. I mean, you know, I think there were a variety of assets that they didn't want to part with. I think they really wanted to fix their costs in terms of giving up a 2024 and not a more open-ended or conditional first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they prized those players in Abbotsford really significantly. You know, with that said, the first is gone. Brustevich is a chip played.
Yep.
This team could still add. I don't think it'll be quick. Like, I don't expect, like, another fast domino. You know, I think my guess would be that we'll see this settle a little bit, see how the team performs. I still think the club will be watching with a laser focus, trying to evaluate on, do we have enough size up front?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need more help on the back end? I think those are the two questions that are still going to be asked here. And, you know, if they get to the point where they're trying to add additional depth for the playoffs, an additional puck moving D, an additional right-handed D, you know, I could still see one of those Abbotsford players being part of the package to bring in the right
piece. Sure, absolutely. Well, you look at it now.
Certainly more likely than the type of unique opportunity that would cause the club to really have a long think about trading a Volander or like Aramaki.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Those guys, I don't want to say untouchable because this is Jim Rutherford we're talking about. This guy tips his own trades in radio interviews. This is like high noon stuff,
yeah.
Gunslinger stuff, right? And it's awesome, by the way.
What a legend.
There's kind of like an old school showmanship element to that like type of sports executive that we don't see that much anymore.
They've had a great season, obviously, and a great year since hiring Rick Tocchet. But you just think of this month, right? Rutherford gets the extension. Alvin gets the extension. Same day, Rutherford goes on radio in Toronto. Is like, yeah, man, might not have to wait long before a trade happens and breaks the trade. Big trade. Like, what may be the biggest piece that will move at the deadline in January?
Tipping a trade and having everyone think you're kidding, because who would do that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool.
It's very good.
It's so cool. It's such a flex. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Whether or not they'll add. Oh, but Lekarimäki and Volander in particular, like the Lindholm deal is such a big swing. If they were going to be moved, it would have been in the biggest swing, right? And they weren't moved in this one.
I think a lot would have to happen before those guys get moved now, right? I think there was a chance that the Canucks did something bigger, but now that they've, you know, gotten off the Kuzmenko money, brought in Lindholm, mm-hmm. Dealt their first, like, man, I really think Volander and Lekarimäki are going to be very hard for another team to pry loose. I think it's going to take a really unique multi-year opportunity with a player that they view as, you know, if not a core piece, like that next Hronik type level.
That's what I was just going to say. Like that quality of, oh, wow, this could really meaningfully raise our ceiling as a team.
So I don't expect that.
Yeah.
But I do think the next asset up, like the next best asset that the club has to play, you know, it's probably Pod Colson. And so it's interesting. The club is clearly, explicitly taking the Nils Höglander type approach where Pod Colson's going to stay in the American League. They don't want to bring him up for a game. They want to bring him up forever. Mm-hmm. And you know, given how many expiring contracts they have, I mean, there's a reason I pointedly asked that question of Colton, right? This club's probably going to find itself in a spot where they're really hoping that Baines or Pod Colson come into camp next year and win a job.
Yeah.
Right? Provide some of that size they need in the bottom six. Help them replace some of the really useful, you know, glue players that have, because of their contributions to this team that's currently first in the NHL, you know, are about to cash in. And fair enough. And they're going to do their best to keep those players on fair deals, but they're not going to be able to keep everybody.
No.
There's going to be opportunity available. So those moves won't be done lightly, but I do still think, even as this patient approach is being taken with Pod Colson, I do think it's at least worth grappling with the reality that, you know, that's probably their best asset left to play, that they'd still be at least, you know, still they'd probably be holding their nose, but, you know, in a totally different fashion than with a Volander or a Lekarimäki for obvious reasons.
I mean, I still think Pod Colson could play a role in the playoffs for them, right? Like, if it comes to it with injury or something, right? Now, maybe it's not, you don't love that option, but, like, he's there. He was drafted in 2019. He's not super, super young. He's played in the NHL before, right? So, like, that's depth to me. That's depth that you have on hand for the playoffs.
I mean, so I'm just going to litigate that briefly, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, so with Lindholm added.
Yeah.
With Lindholm added and probably playing with Pettersson, you're assuming that Amon, Lafferty, Höglander remains your fourth line.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he gets in over any of the 12 healthy forwards that they have.
No.
But if there's an injury or something, right, and you need him to come in, like let's say it's round one of the playoffs.
So one injury,
Phil DiGiuseppe. Yeah.
Right? Two injuries. Is it Sheldon Dries?
I think it might be Pod Colson, depending on the role.
Over Baines?
I think so, right? If it's a bottom six role and you think about the forechecking and the physicality.
I don't know.
I would bet on Podkolzin over Baines. Played in the NHL, Baines hasn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. Like, you might be right. But I think it's close. Like it, or and it might also be Linus Karlsson. Like, I do think Rick Tocchet likes the reliability of that stick on puck game, right? The work on the walls, the size. So anyway, the point is at this point, Podkolzin's 23. He's waiver. He requires waivers next year. And we're at least it's debatable when I bring up Sheldon Dries, Linus Karlsson, or Podkolzin, mm-hmm. or Archdeep Baines, right? That's, you know, I think that speaks volumes, even if our listeners agree with you that he'd be the next guy.
Sure. It's not like clear cut. Oh man, I can't believe we're going to be able to bring this guy in for the playoffs. You know what I mean? But I do think he could be an option at some point there. On what they could do beyond this. So Rutherford on the Jeff Merrick show today, here's what he had to say on that. We'll watch the team real close until the deadline. I'd like to think it's more about tweaking now. We hope that we don't have to do anything else, but we'll see what comes along and what the prices are closer to the deadline, right? So kind of acknowledging this was probably our big move. No surprise there. Of course, it's a big move. Maybe we don't have to do anything, but you know, we'll see what comes along. We'll see what the prices are. So leaving the door open as well. I also wanted to note your colleague at The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, has a new piece looking at some of the potential fallout from this Lindholm deal. And speaking of Chris Tanev, he says, I think Tanev gets dealt in the end. Vancouver, by the way, tried hard to have him included in the Lindholm trade, but the price point was too high. There are just too many teams of interest. The general price tag right now from Calgary is a second round pick plus another asset, according to league sources. If a team would be willing to jump up to a first round pick, they'd probably get Tanev now. So that's an interesting framing from LeBrun, right? Because, you know, we'll see. Maybe a team isn't willing to pay a first-round pick, and maybe the price comes down a little bit closer to the deadline.
It's poker. This is poker, okay? Yep. But I think there's confidence. Like, I think the Calgary Flames think they're holding the nut cards with the best defender likely to move, and they believe they can get a first. And, you know, if that's the case, I don't know that the Canucks can make that happen. They just traded their first.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's that complicated beyond that.
I mean, they have next year's. Now that's a big price to pay.
I think that would be something they'd be very reluctant to do at this stage. Not to say that they wouldn't trade next year's first, but I don't think they're going to trade next year's first with uncertainty hanging over one of their most important mm-hmm. superstar level players, and, you know, $40 million in useful expiring contracts. You know, I think that's the sort of move that we could see them make next year in season. I think there'd be a fair bit of reluctance given how they're positioned to do it in advance.
We should also note Canucks don't have their second round pick this year. So their earliest 2024 pick that they own right now is their third, which of course could end up going to Calgary if they make the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, so
the second was
they
traded.
Actually kind of can't trade it.
Well, they could. It would just be like you'd have to work it out with the other team that it would be you're either getting our third or like
right.
our fourth and our fifth or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be complicated, but you could do it.
A 5-15 graph press release.
Describing the conditions on the pick. But so they don't have their second round pick. So that in terms of like what other assets do they have to play with, you're right. If you're taking Lekker, Mackey, Volander, and the 2025 first off the table, then you're down to Podkolzin and Ratu.
Yeah, and right? I don't think you're taking it off the table, but it has to be something like, you know, oh, we can't miss this opportunity. It has to rise to that level, I think, before the Canucks will get serious on that, you know, about parting with assets that valuable.
We will take a break. Lots more to get into on the other side, though. I do want, there's a chance he's doing media availabilities for the All-Star game in Toronto. There's a chance that we get a call from new Canuck Elias Lindholm here in the final segment of the show.
No promises.
No guarantees. I don't want to promise it. Again, he's got his media obligations in Toronto, but we'll see if the timing works out. Hopefully we can talk to him. If not, we'll take lots of your texts on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here with you. One final segment of the show. Big day. Lots to chew on here. We are live from the Kintec Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. By the way, Patrick Alvin will be giving a Zoom media availability. 2 days in a row meeting with the media for Patrick Alvin. I believe that's at 4:30. So you'll either be able to hear that live or at least hear the highlights here on Sportsnet 650, of course, when that happens. So now, of course, I mean, we've done, you know, the big trade.
2 days, two press conferences for Patrick Alvin.
Yeah.
Busy.
Yes. Yeah. So I love to look back because we did the game yesterday. Like, how much do you read into all of these quotes from Patrick Alvin? And some of them were like, well, you know, it might just be more depth moves that we do. You never know. It's like, okay, that should have been a zero.
What did we give it?
I don't know, but it's
like, I don't think we were ever.
I don't think
that.
We were particularly high on it. No,
I think he knew when he talked.
I just loved like the yin and yang of Rutherford and Alvin, though, right?
Oh, well,
Alvin's
so good.
Like, well, no, we might not do it. You know, might just be depth. You never know. We got to really weigh this carefully. And Rutherford's like, yeah, we're probably gonna do a trade tonight, guys. It's so great. What a duo. What a combo.
Yeah, you know, you need that in any good working relationship, right? You
100%.
Need you need someone to rein it in and keep it on the rails, and you need someone who's shooting from the hip.
I did like this text, though, from Chet and Burnaby. He says, hey, it got drowned out by the big trade, but Alvin's comment about no one should get too big a piece of the pie, people thought it was about Pettersson, but what if it was about Hronek? It rarely gets talked about, but what if he's looking for a big raise? What if it was preemptively about Elias Lindholm?
Oh, my God. This is like that galaxy brain meme, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, like, goes down further and further. Hronik's going to get a big piece of the pie.
He is. Somewhere. Whether it's the pie here or the pie somewhere else, he's going to get a big piece of the pie.
Oh, I think they're going to try and go long. I don't think there's
I mean, he's been
mystery.
A great fit.
I don't think there's a ton of mystery. I think they're going to try and go long. No one wants to do the arbitration dance and the, you know, obviously things will be in a bit of a holding pattern while they figure out the Pettersson piece, and that makes sense, right? You got to work from the top down in terms of your biggest line items. But I think getting Hronek done and getting Hronek done with some significant term will be this club's preferred approach. And honestly, I mean, they just traded an offensive-minded right-handed defender.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a Brustevich probably had more value than Elias Pettersson, but not by a mile, right? Like, in the same realm, mm-hmm. right?
The defensive prospect.
Yeah, now,
yes.
Yeah, of course. The same
hot sports radio debate. Who has more value, Elias Pettersson or Hunter Brustevich?
Yeah, I mean, we can. That's a quick one if you're talking about PD the first. But yeah, no, and maybe it was Calgary's preference, right? I mean, that's part of prospect trade values. Exchange mm-hmm. values, you know, differ based on the individual preferences of individual evaluators for individual teams. But, you know, I guarantee you that at least somewhere along the way in amateur scouting conversations or management meetings, right? Like, part of the logic of Brustevich being willing to part with Brustevich as opposed to other things is, well, we've got Quinn Hughes managing the power play for the next 4 years at least.
Yep.
And we've got Hronek. You know, that's
We've
part
got,
of it.
Like, second offensive defenseman.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're expecting to have that filled long term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No question. No question in my mind. So, you know, I do think there's anyway, that's all I'm saying. I think Hronik's gonna be a priority. I don't think that was a shot at anybody. Personally.
No, I don't think it was a shot. I think it was just speaking generally about, I've got a million UFAs to sign, and I'm going to have to be really careful about that.
Yeah.
And how I divvy up the money.
For sure. And honestly, I think the strength of depth, the strength in numbers approach that we're seeing from the Canucks this year is really instructive. Right? And I do think we're seeing the inverse play out. Now, I'm a big believer that you get to a certain point and need to begin to cash out good players for great ones. I think you need to take those shots, right? That's the Vegas model. Like, that's a big part of what Vegas did, was continuously be willing to trade an Alex Tuch to try and get your Jack Eichel, right? Being willing to trade really good prospect pieces for Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone. I mean, go down the list. Like, they've been willing to take swings on top of the lineup pieces, and they've built a powerhouse doing so. I think that's an important step that every team goes through. But in so doing, you know, Vegas doesn't win the cup without Jack Eichel and Mark Stone. We all know this. Alex Pietrangelo being willing to trade out Nate Schmidt to upgrade to Alex Pietrangelo. Yep. But they also don't win the cup without, like, Michael Amadio and that Carrier line.
Chandler Stephenson, they got for a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, that's a home run. I mean, that's a... I don't think people are ready for the Chandler Stephenson. He might be Mozgov.
Yeah, that's actually a really good pick.
He might
for
be
the
Mozgov.
Timothy Mozgov of the
Except
of
he's
the NHL.
So much better than Mozgov. But, yeah, I mean... Like, I don't think people, he's a top 10.
Well, the Mozgov was a double whammy because it was like also the league was changing to make him less valuable at the same time. You know what I mean? It was like it was two trends intersecting at like the worst possible way or the best possible way for him.
For the highest profile franchise. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
It was great. But Stevenson's like a top 10 rate scorer 5-on-5 for among all NHL centermen. I mean, think about that for a sec. Like, all the best players in the league are centers.
Yep.
Well, not all of them, but
a
most
lot
of them
are.
And he's top 10? Like, geez. Anyway, I still think that's an important phase to go through. But, man, if you get it wrong, and the Kings look like they have with Dubois, although I'm still holding out, like, a lot of Dubois' struggles look percentage-based to me and quality of teammate-based to me.
Mm-hmm.
I still think no one should be surprised if the playoffs start and Dubois, like, destroying people, right? Because that's what Dubois kind of does. Anyway, the Kings look like they've got it wrong in that Gabe Vilardi turns out to have been like a bigger driver than certainly I realized. You know, Rasmus Kupari hasn't even been a big part of the Jets' success, but you know how I feel about Rasmus Kupari.
Yep.
Sick. There's another piece involved.
Iafallo.
Oh, man.
Good
and Iafallo is awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, you trade three useful pieces for one, and do you have enough, right? The Kings are still good, but the Jets have really leveled up. Like, to this point, it looks like a home run for Winnipeg. So, you know, I think you got to look at that and almost apply the same concept, except internally. Like, the Canucks are facing their own internal decision on that beneath the Pedersen-Hronek tier now that you have Lindholm, right? If you keep Lindholm, but it costs you Lafferty, Joshua, Cole, Myers, on, you know, are you better? Or are you better maximizing the number of players who've been big contributors this season and being willing to walk away from Lindholm? Like, that's a dynamic that I find fascinating and one that I think the Canucks will have to grapple with.
And maximizing your ability to try to repeat last year's, or at least come close to repeating last year's free agency success, right? Mm. Giving yourself that extra money to work with going into the summer. Because there's a world where the Canucks are one of the power players in free agency this summer with the amount of cap space they could have and the different things they could do.
And how things could shake out.
And I don't know what the market for like cap dump trades is going to be now that people can start seeing
the growth
coming, right? I don't think it's going to be as robust as it was during like the really dark days of the flat cap era, but they could still be players in that market too.
You still might be able to get players for free. You just probably aren't getting
paid. Yeah. Or you at least get them for free or like a severely discounted price relative to their performance.
I think you're right. Maybe we should ditch the pie. Maybe pie is the wrong analogy.
But I love pie.
Dude,
ditch the pie.
Big. How dare you? It's banana cream.
That's outrageous.
What's your favorite pie? We
My
should draft pies.
Pie, that's a good one. We'll do that. We'll do that.
3.14.
Obviously not.
Yeah.
I think probably like apple.
Oh, classic.
To be honest.
Boring.
I mean, it's great.
Yeah, it's.
But
super
I don't
good.
Know. I love blueberry pie.
Me too.
Blueberry pie is fantastic.
Strawberry rhubarb.
Strawberry. Oh, yeah. Love strawberry.
That's the
rhubarb.
Number one. That's the right answer. That's the answer
rhubarb.
I was hoping for. Anyway, you know from the fact that you reacted like someone who drank too much the night before ordering a Caesar. Like,
I do,
oh, yes.
I do love banana cream, though, as well, I got to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, like, anything, listen, guys, there's a lot of good pies out there.
Absolutely. oh my goodness. I think we should ditch, maybe it's more like cake. And what the Canucks did this year, right, was they, first of all, turned Oliver Ekman-Larsson into a cake. And then, instead of doling out pieces, they did cake bites. It was more like appetizer size.
I'm just imagining the Netflix show, Is It Cake? The life-size Oliver Ekman-Larsson cake.
I'm going to be honest with you. I love that show. I've watched every episode they've ever made. That's like absolutely one of my, you know, I'm not even guilty about it. I just love it.
Just a pleasure, not a guilty pleasure.
I don't know why. It's fun to see things stabbed with a knife, and like sometimes the knife doesn't stab them.
It's so good. The host of that show is like my broadcasting idol.
Oh, yeah.
It's like he has one thing he has to say, which is it cake, over and over and over again. And he's clearly just practiced like 10,000 different ways of saying is it cake with different intonation and pronunciation. It's fantastic.
He's honestly really good at it, too. It's like, is it
cake?
And it completely changes the meaning of the
scene. His 500th way of saying it.
He does such a good job.
Yeah. Anyways.
Shout out to Mikey Day.
What were you talking about? I have no idea. Oh, cake. Cake bites.
Cake pops, yeah.
Yeah, cake pops.
Are they called cake bites? Larsson.
I don't know. You said cake bites.
Man, we really got off the rails on this segment.
You had a point you were going to make.
I did. I made it.
Oh, you made it. Okay.
Maybe you're better off with the appetizers.
Okay.
Honestly, I think you might be better off with cake bites as opposed to the big slices of pie.
Well, definitely at a certain point. Right? Like, and this is, you know, I think it's a less pronounced dynamic in the NHL than it is in the NBA, but I think we're seeing teams move away from like the big three era, right? Because it's like, well, there's only one basketball to go around, and if you have three really high usage offensive players, you're getting diminishing returns rather than having two really, really good top of the lineup players and then quality role players around them. And I think there's a similar dynamic in the NHL. You know, if you have your superstar core talent like the Canucks do with Pettersson, like basically you fill out power play one with super high end offensive guys, and then you're looking for those role players after that, right? In a lot of ways.
I'm sorry. The text message inbox is just people suggesting pie types.
Yeah.
And someone suggests a lemon buttermilk pie, which I have never had, but now must.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds very good.
So what were you saying?
It wasn't about pies, so you tuned out.
I did. I'm sorry.
You completely tuned out.
No, I'm kidding.
Like,
I.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to need a recap.
I was saying, like, okay, in the NBA, there was the big three era, right?
Okay,
like
right.
We moved
sorry.
Around from that because it's what? Like, well, okay, there's only one ball to go around. Stacking high usage offensive players, there's really diminishing returns when you get to number three, right?
The problem with this analogy, though, is that the NHL or the NBA modified the rules.
Mm.
Do you know about this? The second bib? The second apron?
Yeah, the
apron.
Second apron.
So the
yes.
second apron, the second bib, impacts. So when you go over the second apron, which means you go as far into the luxury tax as the Golden State Warriors do year after year with a $200 million roster, you actually lose the ability to do like the mid-level exceptions
or the
biannual veteran exception. You lose the ability to sign guys in season, so it actually strips your roster flex away from you, so you can't just be in on three guys and then be like, well, this guy got waived, we're gonna
get him,
you know, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
So that they like really made it punitive, and the Bradley Beal trade was the one that I thought people didn't understand, because the Suns effectively built a big three. They gave the Warriors nothing in return. And people were like, what a steal for Arizona. And I was like, I've seen this movie. This is the Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade. Like, this is, well, they got the best player in the deal, as if that's relevant in a world where your flexibility can be restrained as much now in the NBA as it has been for the last 6 years in the NHL. We know that the NHL is a depth league.
Yeah.
We know that makes the difference at the top end usually. And yet, you know, and I do think this is an important thing to note. Like, this is taking nothing away from the work that Rutherford and Alvin have done, especially because I think the biggest picture thing that they saw, that certainly I didn't, and I don't think a lot of people did, although no one will admit that today, is, as Alvin said during the presser the other day, you know, there was, what I didn't anticipate was how well it's gone. What I did anticipate was that our star players could be even better.
Yeah.
With certain structure and accountability and on in place. All the habits that the Canucks organization loves to talk about. As much as we should praise the work that Vancouver's done, adding your Sam Lafferty class player and rebuilding this defense and swinging for the fences with Hronek and on, and having all of that go right, we're not here talking about the Lindholm acquisition or the Canucks' chances of, you know, going on a run deep into the spring if Quinn Hughes doesn't go nuke.
Mm-hmm.
If Elias Pettersson doesn't continue to be at a preposterously high level. If Thatcher Demko's not at a Vezina nominee at least level. If JT Miller doesn't continue to do JT Miller stuff. So, you know, it is worth remembering, like, you know, and you see lesser examples of this in Toronto. Like, in Toronto, they swung on a bunch of depth pieces this summer and missed on almost every one. It's like it couldn't be a sharper contrast between the Canucks hitting on every single one and the Leafs missing on every single one. There's a reason why I think we take the Canucks' Stanley Cup chances a little more seriously than we do the Toronto Maple Leafs for the first time in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the fact that the Maple Leafs are still good, because they've got Matthews, Nylander, Marner, all of whom are playing really well. And that sometimes is the, not even sometimes, at the end of the day, that's the biggest part of the equation and remains the biggest part of the equation for the Canucks.
The core players and the superstar talents playing like they are is the prerequisite that makes the other stuff count, right? That makes the other stuff really matter for what you're doing as a team. Because you're right, if you don't have that high-end talent, you can go out and ace acquiring all of these role players, right? But you're going to be what? Like a wild card team at that point, right? You know, a well-coached team of guys who work really hard and play their role, but you lack that superstar talent. We've seen teams like that. That has a very, very limited upside. You need both factors to really make it work. And, you know, I do think that ability, I also don't think we should necessarily hold Rutherford and Alvin to the standard they set in this free agency period. Like, we can't expect every crop of free agents to work as well as this one did. That's just not realistic. Everyone is going to miss. Even the best front offices in the sport are going to have misses. But if you think you can hit at a significantly high ratio without spending, I mean, and you have that core talent there. Like, I was thinking about this in terms of them opening up the cap space for next year, because you've made the point of, hey, would really like to see them do something that kind of affects not just this year, but the entire 2 or 3 year window beyond it. Well, in a way, opening up cap space does do that.
Yeah,
because it gives you options to improve your team for next year in the summer, right? So, yeah, it could be end up being a pure rental, but you can also go out and use that money that you got off the books to make the team better for next year.
Just don't look at the pending unrestricted free agents. Whew.
But you say that we probably would have said that last year.
100% we would have.
And you go out and find the role players.
Definitely will be Susie tier guys.
Yeah.
You know, just like there was last year. Final thing, because you mentioned the hit rate, right? Can't get them all right. Like, sometimes we do a really good segment, and sometimes we end up talking about pie, and I get completely confused and then rant about the NBA's second apron.
Whatever, close enough.
But the key is to fix it. Are you going to fix it?
Did you have something?
Well, I just have a point to make.
Okay, make a point. Finally.
Beauvillier out with almost no pain. The Beauvillier thing, like, I think that was a mistake. I think they didn't get paid enough to take that contract. But guess what? If you get rid of him and net a return and then absorb Nikita Zadorov into that cap space, hey, that's no longer a mistake. That's an ad. Kuzmenko, that was a mistake. But if you're able to fix it like this without pain, boom. Then, I mean, that's the other thing, right? You can't just judge a front office on their hit rate. It also matters whether or not you clean up mistakes. And this club's done a really good job of that too this year.
By the way, when we were talking,
haven't made many
when we were
them,
in
though.
The depths of the cake conversation, the cake and pie conversation, somebody texted in dumbest show, and I sent back a sarcastic thank you to them, and they clarified, no, I like this show. I meant Is It Cake is the dumbest show. So thank you for the clarification on that one. We'll leave it there. Friday show tomorrow. All-Star Draft tonight. So enjoy that. Plenty of Canucks content, including the newest Canuck, Elias Lindholm. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.